This lecture, entitled Torah Part 5b, part of a lecture series entitled Connecting Heaven and Earth, is dedicated to the memory and Le'ilui Nishmos, Mr. Herbert Hillman, Chaim Yitzchak Ben Yosef, Mrs. Audrey Hillman, Hoda Leah Bazvulna Koyen, Mr. Eli Meimaran, Eliyahu Ben Chaim, and Mrs. Angela Meimaran Maknin Bat Yosef, Aleihem HaShalom, a blessed memory. In the wake of the failed rebellion of Bar Kokhba, which had been supported by Rabbi Akiva, the Romans outlawed the practice of Torah, especially its public study. Rabbi Akiva, though, defied the Roman edict, as we read here on page 10. So rabbis taught, Tana Rabbanan, once the wicked government, this is the Romans, issued a decree forbidding the Jews to study and practice the Torah. Pappas ben Yehuda came and found Rabbi Akiva publicly bringing gatherings together and occupying himself with the Torah. Said to him, Akiva, are you not afraid of the government? He replied, I'll explain to you with a parable. A fox was once walking alongside of a river, and he saw fish going in swarms from one place to another. He said to them, from what are you fleeing? They replied, from the nets cast for us by men. He said to them, would you like to come up on the dry land so that you and I can live together in the way that my ancestors lived with your ancestors? Which was not, in other words, even according to this, was not true as a marshal. They replied, art thou the one that they call the cleverest of animals? In other words, the fox was inviting him to come up to the dry land, because he won't be caught by the nets. You're not clever, you're foolish. If we are afraid of in the element in which we live, how much more in the element in which we would die? We can't leave the water. So it is with us. If such is our condition, we sit and study the Torah, of which it is written, is your life and the length of your days. If we go and neglect it, how much worse off we shall be. That was Rabbi Akiva's reply to Pappas ben Yehuda. It is related that soon afterwards, Rabbi Akiva was arrested and thrown into prison, and Pappas ben Yehuda was also arrested in prison next to him. He said to him, Pappas, what brought you here? He replied, happy are you, Rabbi Akiva, Ashrechem. You're praiseworthy. You've been seized for busying yourself with the Torah. Alas for Pappas, seized for busying himself with idle things. It doesn't say why he was in prison. When Rabbi Akiva was taken out for execution, it was the hour for the recital of the Shema. And while they combed his flesh with iron combs, he was accepting upon himself the kingship of heaven. This is Mekabel El Malchus Shemayim. His disciples said to him, our teacher, even to this point? He said to them, all my days have been troubled by this verse. It says, with all your soul, which I interpret even if he takes my soul. I said, what shall I have? When shall I have the opportunity of fulfilling this? Now that I have the opportunity, shall I not fulfill it? He prolonged the word Echad until he expired while saying it. Abasko went forth and proclaimed, Ashrecha, happy are you, fortunate are you, Akiva, that your soul has departed with the word Echad. Like many of these, Hashem is the only one. He is the, this is in Shemayim Voretz. The ministering angel said before the Holy One, blessed be, such Torah and such a reward. He should have been, says, and he quotes a pasuk, says, from them that die by the hand, O Lord, and those have a natural death. He had such a violent and painful death. Hashem replied to them, their portion, says Chalias, says b'chayim, like they have chayim abo, is a very special place. Abasko went forth and proclaimed, happy you, fortunate you, Rabbi Akiva, you're destined for the life of the world to come. They explain this suffering of Rabbi Akiva. based on, and we've touched upon this before, based upon the Medrash, which Rashi quotes in the beginning, and it was Pirish as a commentary on Bereishis. It says, "B'tchilol machshav delivers olam b'midas hadin." Originally, Hashem wanted to create the world with midas hadin, and everyone will have just the complete, you know, there will be just justice for any slight sin, it's a misdemeanor, anything, a person would be punished totally, and everything, and there would be no help given. But Rosh Hashanah says, Yachlas Kaim, the world could not be sustained with pure Midas Adin. V'shitav imoy Midas HaRachmim, v'kod maloy. He partnered with it. This is the attribute of compassion, and put compassion first. So Mefarshim explained, but the ideal is really it should be Midas Adin. And they explain why that's the ideal, because the world was created, really, that Hashem created it to be Meitiv L'Briyos, in order to do good to His creation. But He wanted them to earn it. It should be theirs. It should be coined on their own, but not just given just as a gift like Namad Kisufa, the bread of shame. They should make it themselves, and they earn every bit. But not everyone can do this. So everyone is, it works for Midas HaRachamim. It's like Lahavdol. There was a program in the colleges called Affirmative Action, that they help people from backgrounds that are less desirable. And they know, so they had from the indigent black community. And they, they're more compassionate, so to speak, in the college, to let them in and give them a chance. So Hashem gives everyone. It's affirmative action. Says they give them but they're yechidim, they're zoicha on their own. They merit on their own. And with them, it's midas hadin. And with this, they explain the Gemara Yud Zayin Amud Beis and Brachos, and the Chavdalam Beis and Tainas. About Chanina ben Daisa was says the whole world nizon b'shvil Chanina beni. The whole world is sustained through the schus of Chanina. B'Chanina, da'iloi b'kav chruv me'erav Shabbos erav Shabbos. Sufficient for him, just a kav says is a very small measure. It's equivalent of 16 kiddush cups. So if you would. Avram Chaim knows Kiddush cup is 3 ounces. It's 48 ounces. I don't know if he was machmer like Rabbi Chassidish. But that's all he lived on Boxer, on Kerub. He was from the Yechidim who lived B'Midas Hadin. Rabbi Kiva is ones who lived B'Midas Hadin. And that which he suffered was the Midas Hadin. And they point out the parallel when Moshe Rabbeinu had a vision and saw Rabbi Kiva, his tyrant, and saw his suffering, and he said, this is his tyrant, and this is what zuschora, this is his reward. He says, Shtoy kach olav machshava lefanai. This is what fell. This is Machshava came before him. The same exact expression that we found. All of Machshava came Machshava to create the world of Midas Hadin. And the Forshim explained this. Does explain that this is the Rabbi Akiva. And for he is destined. He earned it.
Was he
Nechlal
in Yachlis
Kayim?
We're saying he was
Nechlal
the Yachlis
Kayim. Yeah, so the question is, it says, Rosh Ein Olam Yachlis Kayim. The world cannot be sustained. So that explains, the world means the vast majority of the world, but there are individuals that it could.
Here we're explaining what was the Chet
Slavos. This is not explained. So evidently there must have been a Chet. There must have been something what it was, the Gemara leaves out. But there must have been something that we find. It's interesting also. There's a Gemara in Pesachim, where the Gemara says the Perek starts Samach Hem and Beis Samach Vav and Aleph is the continues on the Mishnah, where there's a interchange between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer in terms of that which is forbidden rabbinically. Are you allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of Korban Pesach? The Korban Pesach itself is brought on Shabbos. And even though it involves Shechita, involves Malachas, but it's brought on Shabbos. That being the case, he says, what about the Rabbanans? So Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbanans are also allowed. Rabbi Kiva says, only those things that couldn't have been done before Shabbos would be allowed, but if it could have been done beforehand, they're not allowed. Bringing Chutzot Chum, there's other things that would be brought, which would be only rabbinical, but it would not be allowed on according to Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Eliezer says they are, and there's an interchange. So he says, so he brought about Shechita. He says, you know, if we allow Shechita, you know, how could we, you know, this is Rabbi Eliezer's taina. If we allow Shechita, how could we not allow drabbonans? And in the exchange, he says, "B'shchita yeshavtani, you replied to me. You wanted to b'shchita teimisosai. Well, your death. And this, in other words, figuratively. In other words, here in the argument, I'm going to show you through shchita that it's not a you want to shrug me up." And he says, he said that language. But you read this and you say it is like a loshen klola, even though he didn't mean it in that sense. But the words are, you know, the bris crucis vasayim. So that's another factor here. It wasn't shchit exactly, but it was similar. It goes without saying that Rabbi Kiva's death marked the end of an era. As we read here in paragraph G, this is from the Gemara in Soita and Memtes Amud Beis, when Rabbi Kiva died, it says, Botlu Zroye Torah, the arm, the power of Torah ceased. Nistatmu Mayonas Akochma, and the fountains of wisdom were stopped up. Now, when the period of Rabbi Kiva's death, many decrees were issued by the Romans to forcibly assimilate the Jews, similar to what happened during the time of the Hanukkah epic. And here, right on page 11, Rabbi Yehuda said the following in the name of Rav. Verily, that man, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava by name, be remembered for good. For were it not for him, the laws of fines of Knossos would have been forgotten in Israel. So they must have forgotten. Surely they could be studied. The Torah is not going to be forgotten. Nay, he says, they would have been abolished because for Knossos, when there's a din Torah, when you're coming before a Bezdin to adjudicate monetary laws, any three people that have knowledge of this, any three people would be allowed to sit on the Bezdin to make up the court. But when it comes to fines, kefil, arba'ah, you know, double, four and five. Then when they were knossos, there they you need smuchim. You need those who are appointed that would normally would have been members of the Sanhedrin. So it's three members really of the Sanhedrin. If there would be 23 of them, they would deal with the issues of life and death and capital crimes. But for Knossos, you don't need all 23. Three is sufficient. But had he not, because so many people were killed, Rabbi Bava saw us as that there would no longer be those who are fit to adjudicate these laws, because there's no one to appoint them. You know, the ones who have been previously appointed would have been killed. I mean, that's the reason today we no longer have a Sanhedrin, nor do we have a Bezdin that could deal with these laws. So what did Rabbi Yehudah says? Yeah, so what happened? They would have been abolished, for the wicked government of Rome issued a decree that he ordains, and means gives the smicha, the appointment for a judgeship for the Sanhedrin, ordains a rabbi shall be slain, likewise he was ordained shall be put to death. The town in which an ordination takes place shall be destroyed, and the tchum, the boundary, which is 2,000 amas, you know, which we... If you assume that an am, according to Ram Chaim Noah, is a foot and a half, so it's 3,000 feet, a little more than a half a mile, in which the ordination is held, shall be laid waste. What did Yehuda ben Bava do? He went and sat down between two mountains and between two large towns, between two tchums, Shabbos boundaries, namely between Usha and Shvarim. So therefore, it was in the middle of no place. Basically, it was far away from it. So it wouldn't, that decree would not have affected the cities. And he ordained five elders, Rabbi Meir. These all had been Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yose, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elozer ben Shemua. And Rabbi Avia adds also Rabbi Nechemiah. There were six. He was also a Talmud of, and that was also a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva at this point had been killed. On seeing that they were detected by the enemies, he said to them, "Flee, my children." As he appointed them, and he saw someone noticed them and told the Romans, and the Romans came after them. But they said to him, "And you, O Rabbi, what about you?" "I," replied, "will lie still before them, even the stone that is not turned. I'll just stay here. There's no, I'm old, I can't flee." It was stated the Romans did not move from there until they drove 300 iron spears into his body and made his corpse like a sieve. Think of Gemara Avodah Zarah, as in Chesam and Beis, 8b. Further we read, this is a Mechilta in Parshas Yisrael, Hashem, Oysa Chesed La'lofim Lo'yhavai L'shoymei Mitzvoysai. And Hashem shows kindness unto thousands of generations of those that love me and keep my commandments. Rabbi Nosson stated this refers to those that dwell in the land of Israel and give up their lives and perform the commandments. They show their love, the tremendous Mesiris Nefesh, of giving up their life. Why are you going out to be killed? Like they asked somebody, because I circumcised my son. The Romans killed him. Why are you going out to be burned alive at the stake? Because I read the Torah. Why are you going to be crucified? Which is a common way how the Romans cruelly killed people. Because I ate matzah. Why are you going out to be whipped? Because I took a lulav. So after the fall of Beitar, it seems it happened after the fall of Beitar, they took such aggressive actions against the Jews. They wanted to wipe out the whole practice of the Torah and assimilate the Jews, make sure that they'll be regular Roman citizens. And it was to, ostensibly, was to avert having another rebellion. Rabbi Akiva's students fled Eretz Yisrael and only returned when the Roman administration and policy towards Torah study and practice had changed with the death of the Emperor Hadrian and the crowning of his successor, Antoninus Pius, in the year 138 of the Common Era. Rabbi Akiva's disciples began once more to revive Torah study in Eretz Yisrael and began what seemed to be mini yeshiva sessions in those areas the yeshivas once stood. As we read here in paragraph C, when the forced assimilation, this is taken from Shir HaShirim Rabba, the Medrash, when the forced assimilation brought by Hadrian eased, the rabbis entered Usha, This is a list of those who entered. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yosei, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Yosei Aglili, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. They sent to the elders of Galilee and said, "And anyone who's already learned, let him come and learn more." Like we're beginning a yeshiva session, who is not learned may come and learn. They entered and studied and accomplished all that they needed to do. It's hard to know, what happened during this period of time. We know in the period of the Gaonim that they studied a Masechta. This is every half year. They took a Masechta every half year, so in 30 years they completed the entire Shas. And the Zman, even though the year would be divided to 2 6-month period, it was really 2 5-month semesters period with a Bein Hazmanim, and this is of a month. So the Bein Hazmanim was Nisan, Chodesh Nisan, and Chodesh Tishrei. And the Zman, the regular time of the yeshiva, was after Tishrei. It came from Cheshvan till the end of Adar, and then would start from Iyar till the end of Elul. In the time of the Gaonim, the last of these 5-month period was a period that all those who had studied, and they didn't study in one central place. Every Rosh Hashiva, every Chabur had their place, and they went through the Masechta. And then they came to the central place, called the Masifta. They came to the central place where they went over the whole Masechta again. This is what happened in the time of the Gaonim. And those months, this Adar and Elul, were the Yarche Kala, were the months of Kala, Kala meaning the gathering coming together. A Kola, I guess, I call, everyone is there together. This is how the Gaonim explain this. And that's the explain whenever the Gemara speaks of Masichta de Kala. It's not, Korashi says it's referring to, there's a Masechta called Kala. It begins with the Kala's also the Baila. It says Kala Bolei Bracha, Kala does not have the Sheva Bracha, also the Baila Kanida, forbidden to have relations with her husband. Like Anita is forbidden to have relations. So Rashi says this, but the Gaonim, Shrira Gaonim, explained, no, Masechta Kala is referring to this 1 month, I mean, the Kala is where they study the whole time, but on that 1 month, they went over it. And the Rashbam quotes at least this letter, I think, Kufn and Chesam, Beis, and Bava Basra, quotes about the idea, the Gemara speaks about Madura Kama, Madura Basra, of Rav Ashi, that for 30 years and another 30 years. I mean, he says about this, he cites this Igeres of Shri Ragoin. So according to that, they really learned a Masechta at one time. They prepared for it, and then they went over it again. And the Gaon, Gaon really means the Rosh Yeshiva of the thing. I mean, he was called Gaon, but the Yeshiva itself, the Yeshiva is called Gaon Yaakov. So that's what the Yeshivas went over, that Masechta with the Rosh Yeshiva. It seems from Shmira Groin that happened, even in the time of the Amoraim. There's a Gemara in Kuvov in Ksubas, where they speak about how many Talmidim were left after everyone, what seemed to be after they left the Kala. In other words, how many were permanently by Rav Huna? Because the others came, and they're respective yeshivas, but how many were close to Rav Huna? They went through everything with Rav Huna the whole year. So it speaks about originally, it's 1,200, the next generation was 800, and then it was 400, and then Yasma went down to 200, and Yasma, were the orphans of orphans, like it went down those who permanently were there. Not saying how many people were there, you know, when they came to the, you know, to the, you know, the thing that says when they got up, by Rav Huna says that the dust of the ground, maybe the guzma, that you couldn't see the sun. Like it was just some people sitting on the ground and they get up, like thousands of people. And these were the Masifta. And they went to learn, you know, come to by the Yachid Kala. And so it's hard to know over here if when they came to learn, were they learning a whole Masechta or not? Like, and we did, and even the time of, it would come out, even during the time of the Tanoim, this was the case. It's hard to know. And it is similarly, that is in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, and it says, right, and they came to Usha. Usha had been the site of the Sanhedrin during, you know, prior to Beitar. Our rabbis taught, over here there's a Gemara in Brachos and Sama Gilmol Beis in 63b, when our teachers entered the vineyard, Kerem B'Yavna, vineyard at Yavna, it was called, not because there was an actual vineyard there, but the Talmidim were in rows, and it looked like how the vines of a grapevine are situated. In the vineyard at Yavna, there were among them Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So you don't have all of them, you know, that were listed before, but most of them. Rabbi Meir is not in this list, if you notice. The Shimon Bar Yochai is not in this list. And Rabbi Lezer Ben Yankov is not in this list. But the others, this is the majority, were there. I guess this was the beginning, as they B'Shalfe Hashmad, in the beginning when things eased up. Soon afterwards, the study of Torah began anew, raising up a new generation of scholars. They were led by Rabbi Kiva's disciples, as well as Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the son of Rabban Gamliel of Yavna, and a sixth generation. This Shimon ben Gamliel was a sixth generation from Hillel. His son, Rabbi Yehuda, the seventh generation from Hillel, known as Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, Yehuda the Prince, or simply Rabbi or Rebbe, my master, was the one who ultimately brought about a complete revival of Torah studies, as well as an abbreviated, standardized version of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law entitled the Mishnah. The following is his story. Now, just as Rabbi Akiva had a very special place in our history, so too Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. In fact, the Gemara finds a certain commonality between them as we read. It says, when Rabbi Akiva died, here on page 12, Anossi was born. When Rabbi Yehuda Anossi died, Rav Yehuda, this is Rav Yehuda ben Yecheskel, the one of the premier Talmidim of Rav and Shmuel, was born. When Rav Yehuda died, Rava was born. Rava again, because these were the Reish Masiftas. In other words, these were the Rosh Hashivas. It says Rava was born. And when Rava died, Ravashi was born. This teaches that a righteous man does not depart from the world until another righteous man like himself is created. Now, there's a question as to the exact dating of Rabbi Yehuda Anossi's birth. Was it in the year 135 or so? The year that Rabbi Akiva was killed? We're not sure when. As we know, the fall of Beitar was 135. We know Hadrian's successor, Antoninus Pius, came 138. So sometime in between, Rabbi Akiva was killed. We're not exactly sure when. Or does the Gemara simply mean that Rabbi Yehuda Anossi was already here on earth, like Kfar Noilad, when Rabbi Akiva passed away? That latter interpretation seems to be the case, as the following Medrash states that Rebbe's birth coincided with that Antoninus, who the historian Rabbi Goyim Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Kalevi identifies to be the famous Stoic emperor Marcus Aurelius Antoninus, who was born in the year 121 of the Common Era. Let us read together. Here on number 2, here on A. We're taught in a medrash, milk, cholov, has the power to make impure, like if it's from a davar tameh, or a person who's, and milk has the power to purify. When Rebbe was born, they, the Romans, made a decree it's forbidden to perform circumcision. And we know that that happened around the year 121. That Hadrian made such a decree. Rebbe's parents had him circumcised. Caesar sent for Rebbe and his mother to be brought before him. His mother, this Rebbe's mother, exchanged Rebbe, him, for Marcus Aurelius Antoninus. And nursed him until she brought him before Caesar, who found him uncircumcised. He let them leave in peace. In other words, it's lav dafka, when they say Caesar, it could be as sometimes when it says Caesar's lav dafka Caesar, but Caesar's representative, like a governor. That governor who had accused them said, I myself saw that they had performed circumcision on that child. Evidently, he was the spy. He said, I know this. However, the Holy One, blessed be, he constantly performs miracles for them. In other words, he was really in the spoil. Like, how did this kid? I saw with my eyes, they had a bris. But evidently, he says, he let him go. That child that was nursing was Antoninus. And he was mushba, he was affected by the milk of Rebbe's mother. They eventually repealed the decree. And on that base, the Medrash says, Antoninus turned out the way he did, and eventually became a kuruv to Rebbe, according to Yerushalmi and Megillah, became a ger tzedek, is all because of that milk. Besides for his great contribution for the final editing of the Mishnah, taken from the various oral versions of Rabbi Akiva's teachings from those disciples who had survived, the following is also stated. Is per B. Rabba, the son of Rabba, or some say Rabbi Hillel, the son of Rabbi Valdo, said, says, Mimois Moisha, between Moses and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, we do not find one who is supreme both in Torah and in worldly affairs. Torah Gedula B'Mokam Echad. Rebbe was tremendously powerful and wealthy. And we don't find that, and he stood above all the others in this sense. And we don't find that, where we found people, David HaMelech, we found people of great stature who were blessed with both worldly power and Torah, there were others who were also of the same level. This is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was unique, and he was greater than even his father. And his father, and when the halacha was a machlokes with Shimon Gamliel and Rebbe, and we paskin like Rebbe. But Rebbe wasn't just known for his Torah knowledge, wealth, and influence. The following was also said about him. When Rebbe died, as a Gemara in Sota, the Mishnah, the Memtes Amud Aleph. Botel anova v'yirascheit, humility and the fear of sin ceased. And Rebbe, this is Gemara Ksubis and Kuvdaladam and Alpha 104a, Rebbe at the time of his passing raised his 10 fingers towards heaven and said, Sovereign of the universe, is revealed and known to you that I've labored in the study of Torah with my 10 fingers, like with all my might. I did not enjoy any worldly benefits, even with my little finger. Because everything was l'shem shemayim. Everything was for the sake of heaven. What was most unusual in the annals of history is the close relationship that existed between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and the Roman Emperor Antoninus. We already quoted the Medrash concerning their infancy. Following are just a few short quotations from the Gemara and Avodah Zorah, which describes at length their relationship. Here, the paragraph E, this is taken from this one. This citation is taken from the Gemara and Avodah Zorah and Yod Amud Beis 10b. every time he called, he used to it. You know, every time he came to, you know, to visit Rebbe during Antoninus, there was a period of time when Antoninus was in Eretz Yisrael. So during that period of time, he went and attended. He used to attend on. He was Meshamish. He attended Rebbe and wait on him with food and drink. When Rebbe wanted to go on his bed, when they went on bed, the Slav Dafka to go to sleep. They used to eat. They had special bed. They had a bed with a couch, with a, you know, it was like a couch with a pillow, and they would recline like, you know, we do on, similar to what we do on Pesach. Antoninus crouched in front of it, saying, "Go onto your bed by stepping on me." Rebbe, however, says, "Not the proper thing to treat a king so slightingly." Whereupon Antoninus said, "Would that I served as a mattress unto thee in the world to come." Once he asked of him, "Shall I enter the world to come?" And Rebbe said, "Yes." And on Yudom and Aleph in 10a in Avodah Zorah, many a time Antoninus sent Rebbe gold dust in a leather bag filled with wheat at the top, so no one should see what actually was the content. People should not know he gave him gold, saying to his servants, "Carry the wheat to Rebbe." Rebbe sent word to say, I don't need it. I mean, Rebbe is quite wealthy. I have quite enough of my own. And Antoninus answered, Leave it then to those who will come after you, that they may give it to those who will come after me. In other words, they'll use it as bribes to the Roman emperors. For your descendants and those who will follow them will hand it over to them. As your descendants and those direct descendants and further descendants will follow, give it to the Romans. Here is a means of dealing with the Romans and bribing them and paying the taxes. It seems that this special relationship between the respective leaders of Jewry and the Roman Empire translated itself into the preservation of Torah through the ages, through creation of a single standard and concise text of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. As Rashi explains a commentary to Bava Metzia, Lamed Gimel and Beis in 33b. There developed a proliferation of disagreements in Torah law, which began from the time of the disciples of Shammai and Hillel, three generations before Rebbe. And the Torah seems to have become divided into two separate Torahs, that of Beis Shammai and that of Beis Hillel. This occurred due to the yoke of Roman government, the decrees which they issued. Because of that, they're not able to pay sufficient attention to clarify the various legal opinions till the time of Rebbe. The Holy One, blessed be He, caused Rebbe to find favor in the eyes of the Roman Empire Antoninus, as stated in the Gemara in Avodah Zorah in 10b, which we've quoted, and the Torah scholars were relieved of their former afflictions. Rebbe sent for and gathered together all of the Torah scholars of Eretz Yisrael. In this lecture, we trace the lives, you know, this and the lecture before this, some of the great teachers of Torah, from Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. It's important to realize we barely touch the surface and understand the lives of the great teachers of Torah during this period. In our lecture series, The Epic of the Eternal People, Series 1, 2, and 3, we discuss their lives and times in much greater depth. It is available for downloading or streaming at rabbiirons.com or rabbiirons.org. To give a better idea as to the names of the great teachers of Torah during this period, I'd like to quote now from the Rambam's introduction to his magnum opus, Mishneh Torah. And here, this is the Rambam. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five disciples who were the greatest among the scholars to receive it from him. There were Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Eliezer the Great, Eliezer and Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yossi HaKoyen, Rabbi Shimon ben Nisanol, and Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, son of Aruch. Rabbi Kiva, the son of Yosef, received it from Rabbi Eliezer the Great, and his father, Yosef, was a Ger Tzedek, a just proselyte. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Meir, son of a Ger Tzedek. There's a Gemara in Gadata and Nun Vova and Aleph and Gittin that says there's Nero Caesar. The question was, was he an emperor? Was he a general? Became a prosa, became a ger, and Rabbi Meir was issued from it. According to the Rambam, he was a son of this ger. So Rabbi Yishmael received it from Rabbi Akiva, which is a question. We find Rabbi Yishmael also as a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir and his associates, however, received it also from Rabbi Yishmael. And these are the names of Rabbi Meir's associates. Rabbi Yehuda, which are these are Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Nechem, Rabbi Elozer ben Shemua, Yechna Sandler, Shimon, the son of Azai, Shimon ben Azai, Chananias is the son of Tradion, so Chananias ben Tradion. The associates of Rabbi Akiva also received from Rabbi Elezer Agodol, the great associate of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, who was also the master of Yosi Aglili, Shimon, the son of Elozer, Shimon ben Elozer. This is a problem because we find Shimon ben Elozer is a Talmud of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, son of Nuri. And he continues, Rabbi Gamliel the elder received it from Shimon, the son of Hillel the elder. Like where was he going to get it from? His son Shimon received it from him. From him his son Rabbi Gamliel received it. From him his son Rabbi Shimon received it. And Yehuda, the son of this Rabbi Shimon, is he who was called our holy master, Beinu HaKadosh. He received from his father, from Elozer ben Shemua, and from Shimon, says Shimon Bar Yochai, who was the associate of Elozer ben Shemua. He says, now he's tracing the different people and who they received it from. Our holy master, Rebbe, compiled the Mishnah, says, from the days of Moshe, our Matzil, our holy master, Rebbe, no textbook of the oral Torah for public instruction had been issued. The practice theretofore being for the president of a tribunal or a prophet flourished in a given generation to keep privately written memoranda of his master's oral teachings, out of which he in turn instructed the public orally. This is called the Megillah Storim, the hidden scroll. But it seems, according to the Rambam and many others, Rabbi Yehuda Nossi not only composed the Mishnah, let's find what is the correct version of Rabbi Akiva's teachings, or the teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh in general, but also wrote it down. This is also the opinion of Rav Sadia Gaon, and according to one of the versions of the Geras, the letter of Rabbi Shmira Gaon. However, there are other sources, it seems, from Rashi, the Torah, nothing was written down until much later, probably time of Rabbanu Savaroy, much, much later. Maybe everything was still Baal Peh. And perhaps also they kept on making personal notes. But this idea of writing it down really only came much later. There's a Tosfos HaRosh in Ksubas that says this, and many other sources also maintain this. One support to this idea that the Mishnah was not written down is the Gemara in Gittin, Samach Amud Aleph, and the Gemara in Yudalam Beis in Temura, has to find a case where they made an exception to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh when the times was needed, and they cite the fact that the Sifrei Agadata, the works of Agadata, were written down, and because this is Eslas es Lashem, there's a time that it's impossible to maintain the Torah, and the Sanhedrin was allowed to make an exception to preserve the Torah, and they cite this. And he brings down Rabbi Yochanan had a Sefer Agadah, Rabbi Shua ben Levi had. He says, what do you mean? The Rebbe, the whole Mishnah is written down. It seemed to me from that it was not. I mean, there's a support from the other opinion. I'm sure The Rambam and others will have an explanation, but saying that it was not so simple. But Al Kaponim, it was Rebbe that put this together. If you notice on page 15, the last, we just made it easier for you to trace the chain of transmission from Hillel to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Hillel was born sort of the year 111 before the Common Era and died in the year 10 of the Common Era. There's Sakhak 120 years. Just, there is no year zero. It goes from one before the Common Era to one after the Common Era. The Common Era. That's why we get 111 to 10. Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai and Shimon, this is who's under Hillel, and Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai was amongst those under Hillel. Shimon, the son of Hillel, and also it seems Rabbi Gamaliel the first also studied under Hillel. We know very little, like say he's just branch on the Gemara and Shabbos and Tesvav and Aleph, that he had a son Shimon, but we know nothing of his nesius, of what he did or what he taught. The next generation is where Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and this was Rambam quoted before, Rabbi Yossi HaKoyen, Shimon ben Nisano, Lazar ben Aroch. But also the next generation is Rabbi Gamaliel the second. Now, the first Rabbi Gamaliel the first had a son Shimon, who most interpret the Gemara to say that he was killed by the Romans. This is Shimon HaNerag, it's called. And his son, he had a son Gamaliel, and this is Rabbi Gamaliel of Yavna. The next generation is Rabbi Akiva. And his contemporaries, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Nuri, Rabbi Shmuel. Next generation is Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Shimon Bar Yochai, Lozer ben Shemua. We have Rabbi Nehemiah, Shimon ben Azai, Shimon ben Gamaliel the second. That's the son of Rabbi Gamaliel, is the next generation. And then the following generation is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In the next lecture, I'd like Emir Tashem with Hashem's help to trace the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh from the creation of the Mishnah to the creation of the Talmud and beyond. Now, are there any questions?
Things that you get sort of you were going.
What?
30 years to finish
us. Right. What happened with Daf Yomi? What's Daf Yomi? You know, stuff. They didn't have these online lectures. I mean, this is the real problem. And they didn't have art scroll.
5 minute concise.
Shtel zechfor lelan gemor on art scroll, and everything was about pel. Even in the time of the Gaonim, it seems that they still the dogish was to know everything about pel. In fact, they say a goin. The Gemara, there's a Meiri in his Hakdama to Pirush on Ovis, that the gematria of the word Gaon, this Gimel Aleph Vav Nun, is 60. A Gaon knew all 60 tract everything Baal Peh. He knew the whole thing by heart. So even the time of the Gaonim, which it was written, it was not widely dispersed. What?
How come every
Masechta
took the same
time? It's a very good question. How come every Masechta took that much time? You know, the Klenera Masechtas, Midas, you know what I mean? What was their, right? Really, it's really hard to know. It could be that they during this time, they chazered other Masechtas also. If you're just going to go over every 30 years, you don't remember that much. Even Daf Yomi, 7.5 years, you don't remember that much. Even after a week, you don't remember that much. You know, they say a week, it looks a little familiar. You know, so it could be that they spent this, like Kleiner Masechta, they spent time chazering, you know, going over other Masechta. Or from last year's, the Karaz, over last year's, whatever. Yeah. You have to know, also, all of Shas is intertwined. You know, so when you learn one Masechta, you learn a lot of Masechtas. What?
She was 120 when he was killed.
Right.
So wasn't it anyways going to be the end of his life? I mean,
what? You're asking what would have happened anyway?
No, I'm saying it is before also that why was he what was the Midas HaDin?
You're asking what was the Midas HaDin? See, he would have died. It could be he would have died at 120. He would have died in a regular, in a way. He would have died. Mrs. Nashike would have died in his sleep. This was a terrible way to go. Not so much of that he died, but the way he died. He was imprisoned first and then tortured.